Welcome to the All-in-One podcast for middle school language arts teachers. I'm Linda, and I've been a teacher for over 30 years. I can help you with tips, tricks, and motivation that will simplify your planning, streamline your teaching, and enjoy more free time. Well, hey there, it's Linda. If you're listening in real time, it's October. Although the weather is my favorite in October, I know how exhausting this month can be. Aside from the fact that the honeymoon is over and real grading has started, you are inevitably going to be observed. Observations can cause dread and fear even in the most seasoned teacher. And although we don't want to have a big dog and pony show when we're getting observed, if you know that you're being formally observed, it certainly will behoove you to do your best. Of course, I'm aware, very well aware of those surprise observations. The main ideas that we will talk about here can and should be used in any lesson. But like I said, if you do know when your observation is going to be, you really want to do everything you can to ensure that it goes smoothly and showcases your strengths to your administrator. Before we dive in, I want to make sure that you know, as always, I'd mention at least one freebie in my podcast. In this podcast, I'll be mentioning several of them that you don't want to miss. I also really want to encourage you to sign up for my email, because once you're on my list, I'll send you any future freebies that I make, and I do make quite a bit. You'll also be alerted if I have a sale or a new product is available, so you'll definitely want to grab that email opt-in and any freebies that I mention, and I'll link them all in the show notes. Okay. So in this episode, we are going to talk teacher observation. We're going to talk about selecting the perfect lesson for your observation and how to carry it out. So we're going to discuss anticipatory sets, scoring high using less teaching, centers, your movement around the classroom, higher level questioning, and closure. Okay, so let's dive in and let's start first with anticipatory sets. So one of the most basic and some might say crucial parts of a lesson is the opening. I mean, think about it. You've been to many workshops and have taken many, many classes. When the instructor can grab your attention from the beginning, you're usually all in. And if they don't, you're usually out. And I would say that our middle schoolers are like this times a million, right, with their attention. So I remember one time I had my very favorite principal show a video of a science teacher literally lighting something on fire to capture his students' attention at the beginning of the class. I honestly don't remember all the details and what he was setting on fire, but the point was he got his kids' attention. My principal then went on to ask, how can you figuratively set your class on fire as soon as they walk into the door? It was honestly such a good discussion, and some great ideas came from it. It's something that I always keep in mind in my teaching. So it's important to have this in place for many reasons. First, it's good teaching. However, we all know that there are days that you just need to get right into your lesson, or there are odds and ends that need to be addressed. Some days just don't lend themselves to the perfect lesson. So, if the observer pops in, you need to have something on hand. Just to give you some ideas, one of my favorite anticipatory sets is playing a song that somehow relates to the lesson. You can have it playing as kids come in and then have a quick question to answer, maybe on Google Questions or in their reader's notebook. By the way, I do have a blog post on Google Questions and how to use them. They are absolutely, to me, the most underrated part of Google Classroom, and I find it so helpful. But I do have a blog post on that, and I'll link that. But here's an example of an anticipatory set using a song. If I'm doing a writing lesson, I'm maybe using metaphor, for example. I play "I Am a Rock" as the kids walk in. And then on my Google questions, I'll attach the lyrics and have kids write what the metaphor is and what it means to them. I think there are multiple metaphors in that song, so they could write any one. Then we'll share a few responses, but you don't want to let this go on and on. You want to keep it very brief, like within the first 5 minutes of class. If you have that time when an observer pops in and you just need to have something on hand, I have a bunch of generic class openers that will help you. They're free and I'll link them in the show notes. This way, if somebody should pop in, all you have to do is copy and paste it and post it, or just write it on the board and let the kids write about it in their reader's notebook. This way you'll kind of be prepared. Okay, the second thing I'd like to talk about is scoring high with less teaching. The biggest mistake I see new teachers make during their observation is teaching too much. And yes, you heard that correctly. I mean, of course, you have to lead the class, get them ready, give them some direct instruction, but the majority of the time should be spent with students doing the work and activities that you provide and being engaged. So if you've been listening to me, you know that I do reading and writing workshop. This philosophy in the classroom has always centered around doing mini lessons. Even though that's a term we hear more in a workshop style of teaching, it can be applied to any teaching environment, even if you're not technically involved with reading and writing workshop. So you want to keep your lessons quick, snappy, and engaging. Do your thing in about 15 minutes, then send kids off to work. And by work, I don't mean sitting silently at their desks completing a worksheet. I mean getting them into groups or working with a partner on higher level activities. Then you can rotate around and engage with those groups. This type of engagement is not only easier on you as a teacher, because it takes all of that mega focus that an observer has on you, it puts it more on the kids, and it will help you to score high. Okay, I'd like to talk about centers next. So centers, and more centers. So if you want to showcase your lessons in the best possible way, use centers. This has been a staple of my social studies classroom, as I also teach social studies, but I incorporate it into language arts whenever possible. And I know when you hear the term centers, you're going to think of like little kids in kindergarten pasting things down. And I did teach kindergarten and I did teach first grade. And yes, we did that, but it works perfectly with middle schoolers. I'll give you a few examples of things that have worked well for me by using centers in language arts and helped me to score high on observations. One thing I've done is editing centers, and you do that at the end of a writing unit. I've done this and it worked really well. I simply used the skills that we focused on in that unit and created an activity for the skills that would help them to check their work. So, for example, one of the skills we use in personal narratives is working internal monologue into your narrative. So at that center, I would have kids highlight their examples. They would have a printed copy of their narrative before turning it in and highlight it. I would ask them to make sure that they were writing at least 3 to 5 sentences using sensory details to help them. And I would have a clear example for them at the center. Okay, so I would, you know, write the directions clearly for them, have a quick review of what sensory images are and what internal monologue means, and then have an example, and then have them make sure that they're incorporating that into their narrative. I might tell them to share it with a partner. Maybe the partner could give them some feedback. I would have them rotate. For me, I had them rotate to four different centers in my 58-minute block. And I've also used 2 days to do centers if I wanted to do a bit more. Another way to do centers that worked well for me was a mentor text center. So a hallmark of reading workshop is to have a good mentor text within the genre you are teaching. So, for example, I teach a social issues unit, which basically means these are books that have a clear social issue, such as poverty or homelessness or racism. I read the mentor text to them. In this particular unit, I use the story Raymond's Run. It's fantastic. It's by Tony Bandera, and I highly recommend it. But you never want to kill a mentor text, right? You don't want to just assign it to kids, have them read it, answer a whole list of questions. Don't do that. You want them to be really engaged in it. So you read it to them and then try doing some centers. So you want to make them as engaging as possible. One of the things I do is I do something called an inside outside of the main character. The main character in this text is Squeaky. They use an outline of a person and they're writing down what's going on internally with her and what the outside forces are. I've also have them do things like a class plot line where each pair of kids, I have kids travel to centers in pairs because they always have a reading or writing partner. And they would have, I would tell them something specific that I wanted them to contribute to the plot line. This way they're not just doing this one long plot line, boring activity on their own. Just a little heads up here, be very aware of where you are in your unit. So I would not recommend reading the text to them when your observer comes in. That would not be an appropriate thing, unless, of course, you know, if you're in a pop-in situation, that's different. But you would want to have that already read to them, and then the day the observer comes in, do the centers. One more thing on centers to give you something more tangible. I would do something like a skills-based center. So this works really well if we're having an upcoming test or just at the end of a unit. So for example, I do a character study unit. And some of the skills we do there are character traits, symbolism, and theme. So one center might focus on character traits. And again, it's not just a boring worksheet. I would have them maybe create a class list of character traits for the main character by each pair of students, adding just one. And then I would have them do like a little mini project on their own character traits. You know, maybe I would have cut out human figures and have them write all of the character traits about themselves in there, and maybe, you know, add some decoration to it or whatever and pop them right up on a bulletin board. There you go. Two for one. For something like symbolism, I might have a bunch of objects from the story and have them write what they might symbolize. And again, no boring worksheets. I would maybe have pictures maybe cut out and that they could write on to make it a little more engaging. Okay, so centers, really, you have kids talking it through with each other. You're floating around and checking in with kids and having authentic conversations, and it all bodes well for really good teaching. Which leads me into my next topic, which is your movement around the class. And I'm going to give you three words that are going to help you here. Use that clipboard. Having a clipboard as you circulate sends a message to your administrator. It says that kids working around the room and interacting with one another on meaningful activities is something you value, and that you are prepared to check in with kids to help them move to another level in their reading or writing. But you have to be prepared for this. So you want to just simply create a template that has your student's name in a column and blank rows on top to write your skills in or whatever you are checking in on. Okay. You want to print out a bunch of these templates so that they are at the ready and use it often. Again, there are times when we don't always do this, but if you are getting observed and want to score high, it's helpful to have a clipboard that shows you are recording notes on your kids. So make your list. If you get a surprise pop-in, you will have it all set and ready to go. You can easily fill in the skills on top, even if your observation is a surprise. So this happened to me one time. I was finishing up a mini lesson and getting kids ready to go off to write. I had my clipboard, which I use frequently, but admittedly, not every day. And the skill that day was to use text evidence. I walked around to kids and checked in with them. I had a genuine conversation and wrote a very brief note about how the kids with whom I met were doing. My administrator specifically commented on how that was a great technique and asked what I did with the data. And I told him I used it to form small groups if needed and to look for trends in specific students' writing, which is all true. So don't underestimate the power of this clipboard. It's kind of like a security blanket. You just have something that you can refer to. And be sure, heads up, keep your notes really brief because the point is to guide your discussion with kids, not to take copious notes. Okay, the next thing I'd like to talk about is higher level questioning. One aspect of observations that's very important to my administrator, so I'm guessing it would be to yours as well, is to use high-level questioning. I keep a copy of Bloom's taxonomy on my magnetic board next to my desk and be sure it's handy. If I'm doing a whole group direct instruction, it's right there for me. If I'm walking around, I put one on my clipboard. This way, I have an easy reference to be sure I'm not asking all just recall questions. I would get into those higher level questions with my kids. And although I have most of this stored in my memory right now, having my list close by is sort of like another security blanket for me. Using high level questioning will definitely help you to score high on your observations. So you can find Bloom's taxonomy anywhere on the internet, but I did create it into a more condensed version so I don't have all these pages flipping around. And if you'd like that freebie, it's attached in the show notes. And lastly, you want to wrap up your lesson to score high on your observation. If you don't close out your lesson, you are simply not going to score as high as you can and should. We all know this is important. It's like teaching 101. And we all know that there are days when we don't do it. And I am definitely guilty of it. We all know how it is. You're rushing through a lesson. You're rushing to get kids out on time. We all understand that. Okay, but if you're getting observed, you have to do this. So when closing out a lesson, just a quick review. Be sure to restate your teaching goal, or better yet, ask a student to restate it. Let students know what the next steps are, like, for example, what you're doing in class tomorrow, what the homework is that they should finish, and stuff like that. And have some sort of exit strategy, like an exit ticket. Even though it sounds very obvious, it is a no fail for observations, okay? I like using, like I told you, Google questions to do that, but honestly, just having an index card is absolutely fine. So a little bit of a note on exit tickets, your kids should be exposed to these so that it doesn't seem unusual to them on observation day. So really, you want to get your kids into the habit of doing this. Try doing it maybe 2 to 3 times a week. It's not hard to do, and it really does make a difference. So what I do is I keep a stack of index cards on my desk for times like this so that I can assign an exit question on the fly, okay? So if nothing else, if you're stuck, just have them write one thing they learned on one side of the index card and one question they have about the lesson on the other side. And then they can hand them to you as they're leaving the room, and you're saying your goodbyes to your students. So my administrator is big on personal connection with kids. So me standing at the door and saying, thank you, have a good day, I'll see you tomorrow. Good luck on your game, if I know they're playing in a basketball game. Stuff like that really does go a long way. it's kind of like I look at having a lesson like having company. I wouldn't just want my company to leave without saying goodbye to them and, you know, addressing them personally in some way. And you really shouldn't do that with your kids either. So you want to make sure you have some kind of connection with them as they're leaving your room. Okay, so that's it. We talked about anticipatory sets, scoring high using less teaching, centers, movement around the class with your clipboard, higher level questioning, and closure to your lesson. And be sure to tune in next week because we're going to be talking all about grammar. I know it sounds so exciting and you can't wait to talk more about grammar. But I will tell you, it's a very necessary component for you as a language arts teacher. And with my many years of teaching experience, I can't tell you how many times I hear about people who don't even have a grammar program. They have no resources, yet their administrator wants to know how they're teaching it. It blows my mind, and I have a lot of tips for you because I'm actually one of those teachers. So before I let you go, I want to take a moment to cordially invite you to join my Facebook group. It's really brand new, but the teachers who join are engaged and have great tips. If you're a new teacher, you're going to find this a great place to get inspiration and ask your questions. And I don't, I monitor this Facebook group for any kind of like negative banter that doesn't help. It doesn't mean that you can't express your thoughts. It just means that it's not going to become like a big place for just complaining with no solutions. Okay. And if you're a veteran teacher, you're going to be surprised at some of the ideas you've never considered. And I'll leave the link to that in the show notes as well. I hope this information was helpful. Be sure to check the links that I mentioned in the show notes. My email is available there as well in case you have questions or comments. You can also DM me on Instagram at allinonemiddleschool. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch you in the next episode.